The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is episode 33 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk some more about International Assassin. Suddenly I'm hitting. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. And your friends won't come. So show me where you fit. So show me where you fit. Had that voice.
It just, James Blake, man. He gets it.
He gets something.
He gets at it, I'll tell you that.
Oh my God. Hi everyone, I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I may or may not, I cannot confirm this or deny it, but I may or may not have listened to Let the Mystery Be at least 5 or 6 times within the past 2 hours or so.
I've been thinking maybe we might have to, you know, add that to our repertoire of songs we play.
That actually is a prop. That's a pretty good idea. I even like the song Take It All, the one by Ruel that they were playing in the first promotional items for the Leftover
Season
2.
Have?
What's that?
Verdi.
No, we will not have Verdi. We played enough of that last episode. Mary just playing it off her computer speakers.
Oh, that stuff's serious, man.
Classing it up. You know what? As I've said many times, and I will continue to say, you can call us a lot of things, but professional ain't one of them, I'll tell you that. No, I've been listening to that song over and over again, and I must admit,
Let the Mystery Be.
Yeah, it's actually really grown on me.
It's better than Miracle.
Tom Parada, thank you for writing that song, but God, is it awful.
No, it's amazing, because every single time I say Miracle, I say it. How can you not? How can you not?
You have
How can you not picture Evie with her big glasses?
And the big hair.
And that big smile.
Running around naked, perhaps? No, not at all.
I don't usually picture that. But all right, what did we forget?
What did we forget? Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel like we forgot a lot because that episode was crazy.
Well, you know, to be honest, we didn't really forget a whole ton.
Not that we know. But, you know, in typical Damon fashion, he's probably going to come back in 2 episodes and be like, oh, you didn't notice that coaster on the side of Kevin's bed in the hotel room? That was very important.
Well, there were a couple of things that we forgot. The minor details. The first one was the cod that Kevin's dad...
Excuse me, the what?
The cod.
Okay.
Yeah. The card.
There are some people who are like, you guys have thick accents. No shit.
Well, actually, one of the listeners commented on that, and I will get to that later on. Yeah, the card that Kevin's dad gave to Kevin Jr., we just mentioned it. Like, oh, he gave him a card and whatever. But the card is actually relatively significant because what it was, what it was pictured, it said, get well soon, which was fine. But the picture of itself was of a child throwing a coin into a well. And what did Kevin Gavi do to little Patty Levin? Threw her into a well. So, again, it was the idea of, hey, get to the well. Get to the well. Get to the well. I'm even telling you via COD, get to the well. And the other thing that we forgot, and I didn't put this in the notes, and I'm just remembering this right now, is that, in fact, the Ka that Kevin Garvey Jr. used in the purgatory world, let's just call it that, mm-hmm. It's the same Ka that was Evie's car.
That's what I said in the last episode.
No. We had thought that it was, but in fact, it was the same Ka, and it was the same Ka because the license plates were the same.
Oh, my God.
So that is why I had to mention that. The license plates were the same, so it's confirming that it's the same exact car.
I'm a genius.
Yes, you are.
And I'm a genius.
You know what?
Bam! Just like that. Mary's a winner.
Oh.
I'm telling you, the water and Evie running naked, that's what's coming next.
You know, I would
Mary's proven right.
I really wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't be surprised. And I know Brian David's also thought about this too, and so we're working together on this, which is maybe Evie is in this purgatory world. Maybe she is. I think the
maybe everyone in the purgatory world, get ready for this, is fucking departed.
No, that can't be real.
Why not?
Because Mary Jameson is there.
Well, everyone but those like somewhat dead people. How about if everyone else is? How about if everyone else was departed? Wouldn't that be crazy?
Except for Mary and Kevin.
Wouldn't that be so crazy?
And what about Virgil was there too.
Okay, I'm just saying everyone who's dead plus a departed. Basically. All right. Fine. Theory out the window.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one. I do love you very much,
plus,
though.
Plus, Damon said he'll never tell us where everyone went, so I guess that wasn't it.
You'll just... I suppose you'll let the mystery be.
Let the mystery be.
You ready to get in the listener feedback?
Yes.
Let's do it. So the first one email that we got, as we always start with emails, was from Mike V. And he says, obviously, thank you for the podcast. He loves it. It's very fun and insightful. And he let us know about a site that had the Epictetus quotes that he really liked. And he saw some good instances that where Epictetus was saying...
Right. Who's Epictetus?
Epictetus was the guy that quoted... said the quote.
Wait, is this in real life? Is this in The Leftovers or is this in Dante?
This is real life and Leftovers. Epictetus is the guy responsible for the quote on the closet that Kevin is going to. It says, know yourself and dress your and adorn yourself accordingly.
Okay.
Okay, great. Epictetus is the Greek philosopher that said that. So, Epictetus, this Mike found a link with a bunch of Epictetus quotes, and he said, one of the quotes that Epictetus says is that no man is free who is not master of himself. And he thinks that this refers to Kevin finally ridding himself of Patty, and now he is his own master. And then another one that he used Mike says to us is that a wise man is he who does not grieve for the thing which he has not, but rejoices for those which he has. And Mike believes this is the lesson that Kevin has needed to learn all along. And in Police Codes 1013, which is the title of the next episode, it says that the code, what it means in police terms, is civilians are listening, but in Texas it refers to weather conditions.
Oh my God, Mike V just did the name that title.
Yes, he did.
Ahead of time. Like a psychic named that title.
I was going to say figure out that title. Do you think we should? No, I'm not going to play this song. The next one comes from John C. And he says, first off, Mary, what is up with you always huffing and puffing every time Lost is mentioned?
Okay, John. I love Lost. I love Lost so much that I introduced Blake to Lost. All right? I have so much Lost love. The problem is Kate. Kate has given me serious hate. I have hate on Kate because I think Kate's a hoe, that she was like flirting with Sawyer and then flirting with Jack. And because of that, and because my husband loves Kate, he loves Kate so much he almost wanted to name our daughter Kate.
I named our car Kate.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, no, it's my motorcycle Kate.
Yep. And he wanted to name our son Jack. So it's kind of, I love Lost so much, but my husband wishes he was in Lost.
You know,
so it's a little too much. So every single time Lost is mentioned to you guys, it's like, Mary, get over it. He's only said Lost like 3 times today. No, he hasn't. In real life, guys, he said it 300 times today. So that's why I huff and puff, because we always record late at night and I'm like, God, Blake, your first word when you wake up is, oh, numbers. That's why, John.
I really do wish that there was some hyperbole going on here. I really do wish that Mary was exaggerating in a big way.
But I don't.
But
I don't lie.
She doesn't. In fact, I did want to name our son Jack. And in fact, I did want to name our daughter Kate.
Oh, and then he's like, how about Evangeline? No. No.
Oh, my God.
We have to go back, Kate.
Oh, it's pretty pathetic, but it's quite true. It's quite true. Anyway, John C. continues. He says he loved the Dream Sequence episode. Every series has had, it should have one, even though this is the afterlife, a la The Sopranos, which we did mention in the first episode. There's always something to be said about what isn't real, because there are always little biscuits of reality in these sequences. The bird, the water, and as always, the characters. We should have known when we were going to, that we were going to meet Neil. He's mentioned in so many episodes. I love how they touched on child abuse. It's such a touched subject, but it exists, and it's obvious that Patty was abused as a child by her father, who probably was a drunk, just like her future husband. After all, doesn't a woman always marry the man abusive in this case that reminds her most of her father? I don't know, sweetheart. Is that, would that be accurate to say? Because I know that I definitely married my mother.
You married your mother. I did not marry my dad. My dad is very sweet and giving and to strangers. You are very sweet and giving to me.
Is your father, is he a Gryffindor or is he a Hufflepuff? Oh,
my dad is probably a Hufflepuff, and you are a Slytherin.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Yes, I'm
and
quite
I'm,
the Slytherin.
I'm the Gryffindor. Make no mistake.
Kudos to Kevin for sticking with the mission at hand and being as in touch with his emotions as an international assassin would, which is not at all. Pushing a little girl into a well. Yes, talk about being tested. Virgil drank the water, so did Wayne and Gladys.
Don't drink the water. There's blood in the water.
Don't think we'll be seeing Wayne in the real world like some thought we may be seeing him. And I agree, Wayne is gone. He is really gone.
Well, this confirms it, which is great.
Yes, it is. And was that David Burton on the bridge? It had to have been.
Have to have been? Just because he's Australian?
That's what I'm saying. Just because the guy is Australian doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be David Burton.
There are lots of Australians in the world.
Maybe he is an anti-Australianite.
I mean, we already know of two Australians in the show.
That's true.
The doctor collecting the water.
Dr. Goodhart.
That's right.
So, I mean, listen. Could it be David Burton? Will I allow for the possibility that it's David Burton? Of course I will.
But then why is he dead?
Then why is he dead, or why is he in limbo, as it's suggesting that he is there in this netherworld? If David Burton is out walking among the people...
What? Did you just come upon something?
Perhaps David Burton in the real world is not really David Burton.
Is he Dirty Santa?
No, but maybe someone else is posing as David Burton. Or maybe there's something else going on there that they're saying that he's David Burton.
Or maybe the bridge is special. Maybe the bridge is a very special place that you can, you know, appear in. Well, just like how Kevin Sr. wasn't dead. He was just able to appear through the TV.
Yep, he was appearing. He wasn't in it. Here is where I will allow for the possibility of it being David Burton. Jarnan is, in fact, the Axis Mundi. And as we know, it was spoken about with Patty, the young Patty, as the child she's reading off the pamphlet, Jarnan, and specifically the well, is a conduit between the living and the non-living, or the living and the dead, or the living in the heavens, or whatever, however you want to categorize it, it's a conduit between the two. And the way that it was represented in the show is that it was the River Styx. The bridge was crossing the River Styx. Who was the ferryman? But it could be the Australian person leading you into the final bit of hell, which was what we posited in the last episode. So is David Burton a ferryman? Is David Burton the one who helps bring people from Jarden, or from the land of the living, into paradise, or into the heavens, or into the last ring of hell? I don't know, but at least the River Styx and the River Leith, they both pooled at the same area. And that is what we posited is Jarden. So could it be that David Burton exists in this world and in the netherworld at the same time? Perhaps. I'm not above saying that it would be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, anything's possible.
Yep. As for Kevin Sr. being on the television, John C. continues, and causing the fire alarms to go off, that was fantastic. Glad he listened to his father, that being Kevin, and was able to complete the mission. 5 out of 5 Daemons loved every minute of it. And Chiquita chimes in with an email. She says, what if every time there was an earthquake in Jarden, someone was returning from death?
How many earthquakes does Jarden have?
Well, we saw the first one.
Yes.
Okay. We don't see a character returning from death, although one does die. And she's in fact going along the idea that maybe because when Kevin returns from death, within the netherworld, that there is an earthquake and everything causes itself to rumble and everything falls on Kevin. And there was an earthquake when supposedly Evie departed. I don't know. I really don't know. I think that's a reasonable idea, but I'm not sure. Facebook kid, what do we got?
Joel Johnson said, new listener, and I must commend you on your fight to hide the Rhode Island accent, even though they do come out here and there.
Yeah, they do come out. And you know, Joel, I wanted to say this because let me just go off on a minute here.
This isn't all Joel had to say.
No, no, it's not. But let me just address this right away. Listen, I'm from Massachusetts first, so I have a Boston accent. So I'm not from Rhode Island, even though it's okay. You're a new listener. And by the way, this is for you. Welcome to the family. Thank you very much for listening. But my best friend, John Gallagher, you are out there and you're listening. He listens to this and I thank him very much. I love him dearly. But you know what he told me the other day?
I do. And I think it's amazing.
He told me that I sound like I was from Iowa when I'm on the podcast.
Is anyone here from Iowa? Because if so, we want to hear a recording of what you sound like.
What do you sound like if you're from Iowa? Listen, I'm sure the Iowanese people are very nice people.
Iowanites?
How's that sound? I'm sure they're very nice people. And I don't know if they have an accent. But I decided I am going to get more authentic with my accent. I'm actually going to speak how I normally speak, because now I feel like I have to do that. I don't want to sound like I'm from Iowa. Anyway, this episode, Joel Johnson continues, hit so powerfully that I was speechless at the end, even though I had guessed last week that it would happen. Well, that's good for you. I also have to say that the child Patty was so perfectly done, it left me an emotional wreck after every scene she was in.
Yeah, this girl wins like Creepy Little Girl Award. They always have those child actors that you're like, gosh,
like
you're
the kid
amazing.
From The Omen.
Yes. Yeah. How are you so serious? And how do you remember that, those many lines?
I was, you know, not only was I physically tired at the end of this episode, but I was emotionally tired. I was intellectually drained. It was a fantastic episode. It really was.
Yes. Suzanne Marone Carew on Facebook said this episode was an absolute perfect 10. It was painful and complex, hauntingly beautiful and cathartic. There just isn't a single word to do it justice, but this really is Lindelof at his best, combining the art forms in which he lives of writing and directing with the really big topics in life. I remember feeling that way about the church scene in Lost, the series finale. What a creative take on Kevin's journey. My husband and I were talking about how perfect it was that Kevin ended up being Patty's guide in the end.
Ooh.
Just when you think you're helping yourself, you're really helping someone else. Though they were in opposition to one another in his role as police chief and hers in the guilty remnant, when she died in the cabin, he was the one to hold her. He was the one to save her from drowning in the pool, and he was the one to carry her in the form of a child, representing her innocence. And when she was afraid to move on at the end, he got her to where she needed to be, when all the while it was painful for him. If Justin Theroux doesn't get an Emmy nod after these last 2 weeks, then there's something seriously flawed with the system, because he was nothing short of outstanding.
Well, let me first address the Emmy thing. The Emmys love HBO, and they love streaming content like Netflix. But this show is a little bit of a genre show, and they don't ever really acknowledge genre shows, although there was a big, huge step forward with the Game of Thrones victories this year. But, oh my God, the little girl that played Patty, and the fact, one of the things that I noticed too that I really liked was when Kevin just gives Patty a kiss on the forehead right before he plunges her into the water and drowns her and ends her suffering. You know, she finally got a chance to get away from Neil in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kevin saved her when she... And here we go. Did she try to drown herself in the pool because she was trying to get away from Neil? Ooh. You know, is that the case? Because again, later on, she locks Neil out of the hotel room. He's sitting out there just drinking the booze. And now Kevin finally provides that avenue for her to get away from Neil, even though she was scared to do it. Like, she was scared to leave Neil when she won the Jeopardy sequence. She was scared to leave then. And she even fought it when Kevin was trying to drown her. But Kevin helped her do it. I really like that a lot.
Me too. On Facebook, we still have Nick Margadana.
There you go.
Mm. So why wasn't Patty more adversarial in the battle?
Adversarial.
Adversarial. whatever.
Maryism.
And why was she represented as a child? If it was to make it harder for Kevin to kill her, then why was she trying to help him along the way to do it?
What do you take on that? Why do you think she wasn't putting up more of a fight?
I think because then it would have been harder for Kevin, because Kevin's used to fighting. He's used to, even as a police officer, you know, you're often used to opposition.
Sure.
And so I think it really caught him off guard how easygoing she was. Think about it. You as a viewer, you felt really guilty. You knew that was Patty being in that child sitting on the well,
sure,
saying, are you just going to drop me in or push me? But you felt really awkward.
And not only was she saying that, she was begging him. She was giving him excuses for him to do it. And finally making herself human to her. So is that the reason why you think she was not being as more adversarial?
Yeah, I think Patty was very calculated.
Okay. Because it wouldn't be as... She wanted to show him her human side.
Yeah. To make it harder for him to get rid of her.
That would make sense. That would make a lot of sense.
Rafe Collins Jr. says the flowers on Kevin's father sent. The flowers that Kevin's father sent were lilies.
Maryism.
I don't even know. I'm on my second bottle of root beer, guys. in Christian tradition, they adorn altars at Easter, the celebration of the resurrection of Christ. So Ooh. Lilies often do come out at Easter. So interesting. And Joseph Likazi says, I really enjoyed the moment Kevin was asked if he was thirsty as he was getting unhooked from the lie detector machine. And he said, no, he was lying. I also thought of the bottle of Jack Daniels was a ploy to get him to drink the water. I got super worried.
Oh my God, yeah. I actually thought about that too when he was drinking the booze. I was like, there is water in that booze.
Very little.
But still water nonetheless. Yeah. I was scared. I'm like, oh, no, don't touch the Jack. Don't touch the Jack. Whatever. On Twitter, Terry says, I get Mary could be in limbo, except everyone there we saw are actually dead. Perhaps the heart was for her?
See, here's my problem, Terry. We don't know that everyone is actually dead. We don't know the stories behind all these people.
Well, Gladys is dead.
Okay.
And Virgil is
so
dead.
So maybe you
Patty
knew,
is dead.
You knew like a fourth of these people. There
so
were a lot
Wayne
of,
is dead.
There were a lot of random people. Who was that random first concierge woman, the hotel person?
I don't know. But
we don't know her.
Based off of the characters that we do know and their appearances in this episode, it's easy to assume that those characters are dead and the other people that are in the limbo area are dead too. Is it that maybe... I don't know. Is it maybe that Mary is brain dead?
I'm not that smart. I don't know.
Neither am I.
Paul Rabinowitz says, do you think they referenced Jeopardy? Because every answer is a question.
Maryism.
You at least read these before I did.
Referenced Jeopardy because every answer is a question. I will, you know what? I will co-sign on that one. I will totally co-sign on that. That is totally a Damon Lindelof thing to do. Because every answer inspires 10 more questions. Why wouldn't it be?
I'm confused even by that statement or question. I don't even know, Paul. Colleen Hainsey. I never wanted to be a towel so badly.
Oh my goodness gracious.
And she has the emoji with the hearts for the eyes. Darcy Farrow, please someone tell me The Leftovers has been renewed for a third season. Anyone? Do we have any answers to that, Blake?
No, we do not have any answers. And in fact, I don't think we're going to get an answer for a while. I think by now we knew that season two was coming last year. And I think they're going to play this the True Detective route, which is they're going to do it year by year. If there's a story to tell that Damon Lindelof wants to tell, then he'll tell it. Because HBO, you know, especially now that this show has become the critical darling of HBO in all of television, they want to renew it. You know they do. Despite the fact that there are smaller numbers, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that there needs to be a good story to tell. I'm so frustrated by this whole cancellation thing, and I'm so frustrated by the renewal process.
It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
I know.
Let's get to the voicemails.
All right, let's do it.
Hello, Mary and Blake. I hope everybody in your household is well this weekend. And I give this episode 5 daemons. It was just the best episode I've ever seen. It tops Lost and my favorite Lost. Anyway, I believe that the hotel is in Rio de Janeiro. And the reason I came to this conclusion is the 2 Easter eggs I found were Rhonda Janeiro is actually Rio Janeiro. And the other Easter egg was Make Like Jesus is actually in Rio de Janeiro. You'll find the statue of the Christ Redeemer. And I just thought it was a fabulous episode. I can't believe how many times I've already watched it and how much we're commenting on Facebook, but it was very enjoyable. Have a nice holiday. Bye.
Well, thank you very much. I will say that there may or may not be validity to that claim, but there is at least, it's a callback to where Matt went for a lot of the time. There is the Christ the Redeemer statue on his laptop computer that we saw, and Matt did spend a lot of time in Brazil, so it would make sense that if it were there. But I don't know. And by the way, next time somebody, this isn't your fault, but whoever calls next time, please just make sure you say your name and where you're from so we can give you the proper credit that you deserve when you call in. All right, let's do the next one.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Kendra from Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm actually calling from my car. But I absolutely loved this episode. I'm going to give it 5 daemons. It was amazing. And in terms of symbolism, we got a plethora of things. And so I want to talk about that. So in terms of symbolism, a bird trapped in a house is at the very least an omen of bad luck and at the worst portends of death. Seeing the hubbub over the bird at the beginning sets us up for extreme disquiet along with our confusion. And we aren't sure what's going on, but it's not going to be good. The late Anthony Minghella was a master of symbolism, and he, too, relied heavily on birds. In Cold Mountain, there are 2 glaring examples. First, the dove trapped in the church, and then the birds flying overhead that Ada sees reflected in the water. Water, of course, having powers of divination. Lindelof uses both of these same ideas and then subverts them, but there's a whole story in that one bird. So if we look at Hinduism, to see birds flying are very unlucky. It denotes sorrowful setback in circumstances. And also, to see black-colored birds in a dream denotes bad deeds, while white-colored birds represent good deeds. In Islam, an unknown bird in a dream represents the angel of death. So all across the board, it's not looking good. So the bird in the show is black and white, denoting a mixture of good and bad deeds. Kevin kills the wrong Patty first, and then he shows mercy even while ultimately killing the child Patty. So we have that mixture of the good with the bad. Virgil then kills the bird, essentially trapping his soul in the dream state, which is, in this case, is death. I really loved this episode. I thought it was beautifully done. It was my favorite so far of the season, and I'm looking forward to seeing how everything else plays out to close out the season. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Kendra, for calling in. Wow. I'm not even going to comment on that. I'm just going to leave it there because you said everything that you needed to say. That was excellent. All right, my love, you ready to go for the third one?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Hey, this is Rafe Collins, Jr. I'm going to actually try to talk fast this time. what do I think the writers were trying to accomplish? I thought this was very – the past couple of episodes were very satisfying for people who wanted answers. Now, the answers raised more questions, but they were answers nonetheless. And I think they've been brilliant. and I really, really enjoyed Lindelof's vision of the afterlife, or, you know, what he thought the afterlife might be. You know, this looked like a kind of purgatory to me. So, this is very, very interesting. It was very interesting to see Mary there, because she's between life and death. She's kind of she's in a vegetative state. So she's between life and death, and the birth of her child could send her either way. She could end up dying, she could end up living, she could end up coming back to life. It's going to be interesting to see what coming back to life has actually cost Kevin Garvey. I don't think we're looking at Kevin Garvey anymore, not as we knew Kevin Garvey. The last thing I want to say is that this is going to, I think I said this in the Leftovers group, that this is going to expose a major cleavage between the science people and the supernatural people. It's easier for me to accept the idea of resurrection because of my personal background. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, the discussions that result. Okay. Thanks for being there, guys. Love the show.
Thanks, Ray, for calling. I really appreciate it. And you brought up a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. First, the dichotomy between the science versus the versus the mysticism or magic part of this entire debate. Again, if you listened to the last episode, and I'm pretty sure that you did, but I want to reiterate it, ultimately, I think that the story demands that it is neither. Neither is important. Neither is more valid than the other. The story is the story, and it is real to Kevin. Whether it is the fact that he did die and become resurrected, or perhaps it was science and it was poison, and maybe what didn't work quite enough, or maybe he is having a psychotic break, maybe it was a fever dream, whatever. Whatever it was, Kevin experienced it in the same way, regardless of what it was, which is it was real to him. And I made the comparison to Inception last episode. And when, spoiler alert, when Leo turns the totem and it spins on its thing at the end of the movie and it cuts to black, it didn't matter what happened, if it fell or it didn't fall. The story simply ended. It cut to black. That was it. And that was that. Now, about Mary, you said she's in between life and death. And that is actually very pertinent. That is something that I think we were alluding to, my love, but we weren't hitting it right on the head. You know what I mean? It was, she is in between life and death, and in fact, in this world, this in between world, this purgatory, let's call it for lack of a better term, they actually acknowledge the fact that she's pregnant. What do you think about that?
I knew she was telling the truth. And yep. Well, no, everyone knew she was pregnant. No, they acknowledge the fact that it's a boy.
But they acknowledge the fact that she's pregnant at all. That it's actually knowledge within this world that she is in fact pregnant as well. Like somebody is sending those flowers to her. Right? It because if she is her one truest self, is she actually, like, we're positing that when you're in purgatory, you are your truest self. Like Patty was her truest self as a little girl who was vulnerable, inhuman, and was abused. Kevin is his truest self as a person who didn't want responsibility and couldn't accept responsibility. Is Mary her truest self the way that she is in this world and it being acknowledged that she's pregnant?
I don't know. We didn't get to spend enough time with her. I want to know who sent her the flowers. That's what I care about.
I think that's an extremely valid point. And the other one was something else. I forget now. Damn it! I got too involved with the Mary thing that I forgot the other point. I'm sorry. I just blew it on that one. Are you ready for the next one? All right, let's do it.
Hi, Blake and Mary. This is Ron from Oregon. Love the show. Two quick takes. Windex is the perfect thing to use in a lie detector test. In the eyes, Windex cleans windows. Eyes are the windows to the soul. It cleans the windows to the soul so the truth is revealed. So I like that. Second thing, the decoy Patty in the hotel that gets shot, think it's the real Patty, but it's also really a decoy, because the Patty that stayed with Neil after Jeopardy was a false Patty. It wasn't her true self. Mm-hmm. She was a decoy of the real Patty who wanted to leave. That's all. Thanks.
Wow, excellent job. Thank you so much for bringing those points up. Patty being a decoy because she was not her real self. Again, echoing what we were just saying about being one's true self within this world. So she was, yes, she was Patty, but she too was a decoy at the same time. What do you think about that, darling?
I think that's brilliant.
I think so too. All right, let's do the last one.
Hey, fellow lefties, it's Missy. And I am still in awe from Sunday night. Wow. I always say wow during every episode, but wow. Total twist for me. I didn't expect Kevin's story to come out right away, but we got it. I thought it was going to be more of the Meg and Tommy, that we saw in the previews, but actually, I didn't expect the way that they directed this episode, and they chose to go into a different realm, and they stuck with their decision, and I'm happy about it. I was just so excited, especially when I saw Holy Wayne. I was so happy when I saw him. I was like, yes. I was literally screaming out loud to the TV, Holy Wayne. And then fucking Gladys. And it just, I was excited, and it blew my mind the way that it was very lost, very, very lost. I loved everything about the episode. I'm happy the way they're going with it. I was so excited to see Holy Wayne and Gladys, and of course Patty for president, and the whole international assassin. And we got to meet Neil, and the whole screwed up situation with Neil and the Patty story. It was beautiful, beautiful, and the fact, of course, that Damon Lindelof wrote wrote this episode with Carlton Cuse's son, and it really, really was a nod to all the Losties out there. That's how I felt, and I loved it. I have so much to say, but I'm just gonna leave it there, and I'm gonna say that I'm looking forward to next episode, and I can't wait. I know we only have two episodes left. I hope I don't get to miss it this coming Sunday due to the holidays, but remember, everybody, to come visit us at the blog, the Living Reminders blog. You can find us on their website, thelivingreminders.com. Look for us on the blog button, and we have so many things to share with you guys because we're fans just like you are, and come by, read our articles. We have some pretty amazing things to say. Lots of thoughts and theories, and thank you so much, Mary and Blake, for letting me share my thoughts, and we'll see you next time. Okay, thanks. Bye, everybody.
Missy, I love your enthusiasm for the show. It is infectious. Like, you can hear, isn't it great, my love, to hear her excitement as she, like, you can just hear it,
yes,
right?
Yes.
It's great. And one of the things that I wanted you to, that Missy brought up that I wanted to tackle a little bit here is the fact that they addressed Kevin's death right away. They weren't disingenuous with the audience. And, you know, Mary and I have been watching The Walking Dead, and I've been ripping on The Walking Dead for the past number of episodes. And I have to tell you, listen, there was a reveal in this latest episode that I'm not going to say because there is a spoiler there. And if those of you who have not watched The Walking Dead yet, it's not my job or my place to spoil that for you here. But there is a reveal, and it's about a certain character. And they wasted four episodes or three episodes, whatever it was, to do this reveal. And I got to tell you, I'm just bored with that show now. I'm bored. And it's painful to say that because it was a great show. But now I'm just terribly bored with it. And I wish they had addressed this reveal much sooner. And The Leftovers is once again proving that it's just a far superior show to anything that they're doing on The Walking Dead. That's just a matter of fact.
Hear, hear.
That's just the way that it is. Are you ready now for the tweet of the week?
You bet.
All right, let's do it. This week's Tweet of the Week actually goes to Brian D. And he says, speaking of water, I'd like to bottle the water that the Leftovers writers were drinking during season 2. And then I'd sell it to other cable shows.
Ooh.
You know, I think, yes, you know what you should do? You should actually play that and, I mean, sell it to those who were in The Walking Dead. They need that water. So, Brian D., congratulations for being this week's Tweet of the Week. By being the Tweet of the Week, you get a $20 gift card to the Tag You're It Etsy shop. And you can redeem that gift card over at www.tagyourit.biz. So, once again, congratulations for finally winning the Tweet of the Week. All right, my love. That is the end of this particular leftovers. Yeah,
listener feedback.
Listener
show.
Feedback episode. Do you have any final thoughts?
I'm sad. There's so few episodes left, but I'm excited. I'm excited to see what they bring next. That episode. Whew, it did me in.
It did me in too. It was a spectacular episode. I'm still sticking with the 4.9 Damons because I'm waiting. I'm holding out. I am holding out for the finale, and a lot of people criticize. Well, they got on my case a little bit for saying that this show did not have a signature moment. I may go far to say that this might have been its signature moment so far, because there's nothing like this on television right now, mm-hmm. And this was where I think it took the flag and it stuck it in the ground. It said, "This is who we are, and if you don't like it, go screw." That's, you know, and it was a huge risk, right? It's a huge risk to dedicate an entire episode, and it's not like this is a mid-season episode, by the way. This is in the final. This is in the back nine here. Like we are in the home stretch of this season of The Leftovers, and we're dedicating an entire episode to a dream sequence. That's what it was. There are 10 valuable hours to tell this story. And one of them, at the near end, was dedicated to something that was really, in the end, not pertinent entirely to the overall arcing story of The Leftovers in season 2. It was only pertinent to the character of Kevin Garvey within season 2. It's a huge risk. But do you think they succeeded? Did it work for you, my darling?
Honey, it worked for me and then some.
Yes, it did. All right, let's close out the show.
I want to hear from you. I want to hear your thoughts, your opinions. I mean, let's just keep this going. There's so few episodes left, but let's just drag it out as long as we can. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, Living Reminders.
And if the social media isn't enough for you, you can always get us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Head on over to thelivingreminders.com to check out all previous episodes, check out all different things that Blake's going to tell you about in just one moment.
All the interviews and all of the other episodes and everything that goes along with that. And while you're at the website, you can also click the little button that says support in the top right-hand corner of the page. And there are a bunch of ways that you can support the Living Reminders. One of them is through Patreon. You can donate a dollar or two or $125 billion per month. We'd be glad to do it. Or if you want to do a one-time payment on PayPal, we can do that too. And money is important and everything. It helps keep this a free podcast. Yes, it does. But the most important thing you can do is tell a friend that we exist. If we provide a good enough value for you as a companion to The Leftovers, please tell someone that we exist. Please tell someone that the show, The Leftovers, exists. That way, we as a podcast and The Leftovers as a boutique show get the opportunity to have the recognition that it deserves.
You can also check us out and write a rating or a review on iTunes. That is one of the biggest ways that people can find out about our show. So just head on over to iTunes, write in the Living Reminders. Head on over to the ratings and reviews. The reviews are the best because you actually get to put in your words. Put in your words how you feel. So we actually have one from Midnight Kitty 78 said, listen for the first time and that we definitely read between the lines of what The Leftovers doesn't say.
Wow. How many reviews? How many reviews you got now?
We currently have 79.
79. So remember, 85 is going to get a prize from the Mary and Blake store. So if you are the 85th written review of our show, you will get a free prize. And don't forget that at the end of this season, we will be doing the UltraCast with the Guilty Remnant podcast and Jay and Jack. So if you have something to ask us via Twitter, email, Facebook, whatever. Just make sure you put the hashtag UltraCast. And Missy already told you about the blog, so just go to the Living Reminders blog and read it, will you?
Until next time, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.